Welcome to session two. So a couple of things first to begin with. There are two actions that are required of you. First, that you read the chapters before you come to class. The textbook is there on the screen. If you have problems accessing the textbook in the library or online, please email me. Let me know if you have any problems, because that could be a serious problem, because this course is very much based on this textbook. Okay? And the second action from you is that it would be good if you, it's good most of you bring your electronic devices. That's great. I encouraged that last week, whether it's your laptops or your smartphones, because there'll be some interaction using that today and next week and so on. But also take notes, because after talking to you for a while, I'm going to get you to do some exercises where you'll test what I will test you on what you have learnt from me. So it's good that you take notes so that you will be better prepared to do the exercises. There was a really good question last week, some feedback from you about the Finnish exam. If you are enrolled in YTTP 1150, you are in the Finnish part of this course and you will do a Finnish exam, Finnish language. The exam will be in Finnish. So the question from you was last week to me, the question was, can I provide you with the definitions of key terms in Finnish? Because I will be testing you on definitions in the exam. And so yes, my answer is yes, I can provide you with definitions of key terms in Finnish, and I'll start doing that from next week. So everything you need to know in the Finnish component and the English component in the exam, you will get from these sessions. So this next thing was course registrations. Quite a few of you had problems making sure that you registered in CISL for this course, and you've been emailing me, and hopefully I've been managing that, making sure you're enrolled. Put up your hand if you still have a problem registering in CISL or Moodle. Okay, good. If you do have any problems, email me. I'll try and sort it out for you. There have been some CISL and Moodle problems with that. Before we get started, one more thing is that, I'll see if I can find it here. There was an article in the Finnish business newspaper. Let's see if I can make that bigger, which was very exciting. Hopefully you can see it on the screen. Kauppalehti said that the communications industry is the most profitable industry in Finland. Which is exciting, because sometimes we get the idea that if you worked in communication in Finland, the money is not as good as if you were working in some other areas. But that is now wrong. You can still make good money in communication, in Finland even. Very exciting for you students who see money in your eyes. You are choosing a career to make money. Well, communications could work for you. All right, so the agenda today, four things really. First thing, last week we talked about chapters 1 and 2, but I didn't quite finish chapter 2, so I'll do that now, where we talk about the different roles or functions of corporate communication. To give you a good picture of what is it that corporate communications do in a company or in an organization? So we'll talk about that. That was number one. Number two was, I'm talking this week about chapters 4 and chapters 10 and 11 of your textbook. So chapter 4 was what I call there number 2, communicative management of stakeholders. I'll unravel that. I'll explain that in a minute. And the third thing is crises and issues. Organizations face crises if they don't manage issues. So we'll talk about that. And then finally, I'll ask for some feedback from you, because this is a two-way symmetrical communication session. All right, so what do corporate communications people do in companies? Because I didn't cover it last week. Firstly, in blue there is public affairs. Can you hear me up the back? Wave if you can hear me. Okay, good. The people up the back are important to me. I want you to be able to hear me as well. And by the way, this is being recorded, so if you want to watch it again, you can watch it. I'm looking at myself on the screen now. There is a camera back there. I just need to make sure that the camera can see me, so I can't walk too far that way or that way. I have to check myself. But later I might walk up the sides, and then you won't see me. So public affairs is the part of corporate communication that deals with government mainly. Some corporate communications people for all their career work in public affairs or government relations. All they do is work for a corporation to help them build good relationships with government bodies, with government departments, with government agencies. Building relationships between a company and government is really important to many corporations, not all of them. So that's this function of public affairs or government relations. The other term is lobbying. You may have heard the English word lobbying. It's there in Finnish as well. In Finland, I heard that there's a debate that really a lot of people don't like the word lobbying. They don't like lobbying, actually, because it looks like companies pay money to bureaucrats, to government departments, to try and get things done, perhaps. Or they persuade and manipulate too much. In America, we tend to see lobbying in that way. But in Finland and other countries, not so much. It can be a very ethical way of doing it. It doesn't have to be manipulation. But that summarizes public affairs and government relations for you. The next type of role of corporate communication is issues management and crisis communication, which I'm going to cover in this lecture in a minute. So I won't go into that now. You can get that in a minute. That's today's lecture. Another one is investor relations, or what we call financial communication. A company makes profit, and often it needs to communicate that profit to certain stakeholders. And we're going to talk about stakeholders today. So when corporations are set up, they are meant to communicate how they make money and how much they make and so on, especially with people who put money into the company, investors. Investors want to know certain things, and so people who work in corporate communication in this area of investor relations or financial communication are busy making sure that the relationship with investors and shareholders is a happy one. News media relations. On the 14th of October, the lecture will cover this topic. Oop, good, it's still recording. It told me there was a problem with the recording. So news media relations is a very big part of corporate communication. I would say traditionally, most people in corporate communication were involved in news media relations. In other words, their job was to try to build good relationship with journalists and reporters so that the news media would report good things about the corporations. And so in lecture 6 on the 14th of October, you'll know more about that one. Another one that's on the 7th of October, we have a guest speaker coming to talk about this topic of employee relations or internal communication. Especially within large global corporations, and there are many in Finland, there are corporate communications people who specialize in this, in how to make sure that employees are happy, that they are being communicated to, that they are being listened to. And it helps to make sure the employees keep coming back to work and stay with the company. So you'll learn more about that on the 7th of October. Another one on the 14th of October that we will cover is called community relations. A factory, a nuclear reactor company, especially focuses on this. Because when they build a factory or a nuclear facility in a community in Finland, that community often is not very happy because of environmental problems and safety problems or perceptions of problems. And so a corporation that builds these facilities and communities needs to make sure that the relationship with that community is a happy one. And communication is so important in that. You can understand that. So that's community relations. So that's all, they're the main function. So if you work in corporate communications, you would choose one of those mostly, one of those roles to work in, to specialize in, to make money in, and so on. So that was last week's chapter. Now, today we're focusing mostly on stakeholders, and I've called it communicative management of stakeholders. Sorry for the difficult wording there, but let me try and explain. So communication management, communication doesn't just happen sometimes in a corporation. We in corporate communications try to make sure we manage the communication. We can't manage all communication in the company, but we try to make sure that the communication is positive and productive. And so we try and manage it. That's why I try to say communicative management of stakeholders. And so there's some communication planning involved. And next week we're talking about communication planning, strategizing communication, executing it, making sure it happens properly. And it's also about managing relationships. Professor Vilma Luoma-Aho last week, in her introduction to you, said there was one key thing she would want you to learn from this whole course. Do you remember what that was? Can anyone tell me?
It's all about relationships.
Exactly. It's all about relationships. So if you can, I am reminding you what she said. Please, that's the only one thing that I really want to get across to you. If anything, remember that it's about relationships. This course is called Introduction to Corporate Communication. But corporate communication is just another word for public relations. In some countries, we would call this course Introduction to Public Relations. Here in Finland, we're calling it Introduction to Corporate Communication. It's almost the same thing. And so we call it public relations because it's about relationship with the public. But here, this topic is managing relationships with stakeholders who are a kind of public. So let's look at this. What are stakeholders? And we're going to do an exercise in a minute for you to identify stakeholders of a particular company. So make sure you get this. Stakeholder comes from the word stake. And there's an image on the screen of wooden stakes. Back in the Wild West of the history of the USA, they used to put stakes in the ground when they explored the wide country and they were looking for a home to build for their families. And they would take a wooden stake on a piece of land and stick it in the ground and claim that as their land. So they put a stake in it. So the word stakeholder today comes from that, because you and I are stakeholders of some companies. We have put a stake in the ground and said we have a stake or a claim or an interest in a company. So you might have some favorite brands that you have a stake in, that you have an interest in, that you have a claim on. So you're a stakeholder of that brand. You might go on social media, on Instagram, and there would be a community of fans of that brand, and you are all stakeholders of that brand. So hopefully you get the picture of what stakeholders are. There's kind of a definition there, groups or individuals who are affected by the organization or who affect the achievement of that organization's purpose and its objectives. Freeman was the original guru of the term, the concept of stakeholders and stakeholder management. So on the image there are some examples of different types of stakeholders of an organization. And in a minute I'll give you an exercise, so try and remember this. There's lots of them there. There's owners of the organization. There's customers, of course. There's employees. They have a stake in the organization. There's lenders and suppliers and government and community and society. There's many more than that, but there are some there on that image. So really, it's just look at that definition again. Stakeholders are the groups or individuals who are affected by the organization or who affect that organization. So here's the first exercise. I'm giving you a couple of minutes. I haven't done this before, so I'm going to try this out using your devices there. The question to you is this. List, or write down, type in, which stakeholders are most important to this university? Which stakeholders are most important, do you think, to the university? So you can participate via Moodle. So in Moodle, the course page, under Lecture 2, there is a link there where you can do a poll. Or you can text me to that number, and apparently it works. This is a test to see if it works. Or you can just go here. You can read this here and go there. I'll give you a couple of minutes, and then I'll go to the site, and apparently up on the screen should come up a word cloud of all your stakeholders of this university. Let's give it a go, see if it works. Yeah. Do you know what? If you can do it in English, I'm not going to prevent you from doing it in any language. You can do it in whatever language, but I would prefer English. So you can find the link in the Moodle page. This is an example of the Lecture 2 in Moodle. Click on poll. Oh, were they? It looks like there is a limit to the number of people participating. Let's see if this works. Oops. Yes. My presentation should be here. No. that not working? Have you all been able to do it? Well, I just have to try this. Hopefully it was pretty straightforward for you, and it hasn't been straightforward for me. Were you guys able to do it? Yes? Okay. While we're waiting for that to happen, can you tell me what was the most important stakeholders for you guys?
I wrote two.
That's good. What are those two?
Students and employees.
Students and employees, good. Anything different?
No, I had students.
I thought you guys might nominate students as important. I had a feeling. Students and employees, any others? Government. Yeah. That's obvious, isn't it? Yeah, I don't need to explain that one. Any others? There are other ones, yeah? Sorry? Buyers and sellers? Who are the buyers? So there could be investors. Any others? Other universities? Yes, that's a good one. Yep.
Homeowners.
Who, yeah, like parents, perhaps.
Or rent from people.
Ah, okay. There's a renting business going on. Ah, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
What about taxpayers?
Yes, especially in Finland because it's a public university, taxpayers are. It's still logging in, and I would be interested to see, because so far we've got, what, maybe 7, 8 different ones, and there's a lot more. Any others that we haven't covered yet over here? Yeah?
Under employees, but administration.
Administration. So there's different types of employees. So there's administration staff. There's academic staff. There's more. Any others? Yeah. Yes, so different parts of society. Yep, we would have to narrow that down a little bit more. Yes. Yes, so companies that what?
Need good employees.
Yes, so companies that need good employees. Exactly. So you're thinking about when you graduate, there are stakeholders interested in you when you graduate. For employment. That's good. One more. Let's try one more. Yeah.
Like the academic community in general.
Worldwide academic community.
Yeah.
Yes, they are a stakeholder. Why?
Why not?
They have a stake because of particularly the research that we do. And this university does some fantastic research. I don't know about it, all of it, but I know in my field of digital marketing and corporate communication, some of our professors, you'll see in a minute, have come up with some new theory about stakeholders, about issues, about brand communities, and how content marketing helps bring in more customers. So Academic community worldwide is another stakeholder. Good. All right. You have passed this exercise. I think I have failed it because of my lack of technological use, so I'm going to have to fix that for next time. Faith holders. Last week when Vilma was here, I don't know, I can't remember if she talked about this, but she came up with this term in her research and is famous for this idea of faith holders. Faith holders are a type of stakeholder. So she said this: they are positively engaged stakeholders who trust and like the organization or the brand, and so therefore they support the organization and the brand. So they are positively engaged stakeholders. So in other words, they are advocates. I've got the Finnish word there for advocates, supporters who trust the organization. I like this word, faith holders. Most fan communities, if you're a fan of a brand and you belong in an online community somewhere, then you would be a faith holder. Now, she also came up with the word hate holders. You can imagine what hate holders are. If you know what faith holders are, they are negatively engaged stakeholders who hate or just dislike the brand or the organization. And so they often try to harm the brand or the organization. They communicate negative things, perhaps a negative review. So they are what she calls complainers. Some of us are hate holders, perhaps, of brands or organizations. In a minute, we're going to talk about activists. And often activists can be identified as hate holders. So hate holders always require monitoring. So if we put our corporation hat on and we represent the corporation and we're looking at hate holders, it would be wise to monitor hate holders because they can affect the organization or the corporation we work for. Okay, how do we manage stakeholders? So stakeholder management. Some theory in the chapter, or from the chapter you have read. Theory is always going to end up in your exam. So here's a definition of neoclassical economic theory. There's two we're going to contrast. The first one is this, that corporations exist to make money, according to this theory. They make money for the shareholders or the investors. And when they do that, they contribute good to society. They contribute good to society, and often it's financial good. So when they employ people in society to make money for the corporation, the good outcome is that people get jobs, they get employment. So they contribute employment. The other contrasting theory is socioeconomic theory, which is more focused on stakeholders. So corporations must value other stakeholders, not just the investors. So they have to value their customers more, their employees, community groups. So social economic theory is similar to stakeholder management perspective. Today's newer stakeholder management perspective values stakeholders more, especially not just shareholders and investors, but other stakeholders who we never used to value. So that would be employees and people in the community and so on. So there's a kind of a simple contrast between two economic theories there that was in your book. Here's another one, input-output model. So a very simple one. I've got some words in Finnish there for you. So inputs into the organization would be people invest money, investment. They input work, which is labor. They import material, physical material, so resources. But then on the other side, there's output, which is always products and services. So the stakeholders are in those circles, and the organization is the square in the middle. So I've got there that stakeholders are dependent on the organization. Suppliers are dependent on the organization. They are dependent financially because they need to make money from selling the resources to the organization, and so on. Employees are dependent on the organization for their jobs and therefore for their income. Sometimes they're dependent in social ways too, because they feel the workplace is a family. It's a nice place for socializing. The other one is this stakeholder model of strategic management. It's a bit more complicated because there's more stakeholders there. But the big difference is, notice the arrows go in both ways. This is the newer way of looking at this. If we value stakeholders more, the arrows go both ways. So top left, governments, as a stakeholder of an organization, the organization doesn't just communicate to the government, but the organization listens to the government as well and values the government. Down the bottom left are trade associations, labor unions. Employees today value them and listen to them more because they are an important stakeholder. So the arrows go in both ways. So here's some text. All stakeholders have a hold. Sorry, have meaning hold. They have important and legitimate interests or claims in the organization. This idea of mutual dependence is very important in this course. A good one to note for the exam. I've got the finish word there. In other words, it's a mutual dependence relationship equally valued together between the organization and all stakeholders, which is why there's arrows both ways. Here, the organization depends on the stakeholders for money, but also for legitimacy. I'll see if I've got a definition. Yes. Organizational legitimacy. What is that? Very important term, could come up in the exam, so learn this one. It's the concept where stakeholders accept the organization as having a moral right to exist and accept the organization as a good corporate citizen in that community or society. Another point to make about organizational legitimacy is that people expect the organization to have a social contract with them. It's not a physical thing, but it's a concept. If a factory, let's say a nuclear reactor, was built in your community, I think today you would tend to want to have a say in whether it was built in your community, and if it is built, you would want to have a say in how it runs to make sure it's safe for the community. So you would want a social contract because you are a stakeholder from that community in that organization, that nuclear reactor. So organizational legitimacy, really, if I could summarize it, is it's a perception in your minds of an organization. You have a perception of an organization, and you communicate that perception to others and to the organization. And your perception says this: when you express it to others or to the organization, you are really saying, is this organization accepted? Is it a good moral citizen? Is it a good moral citizen? And so on. So that's the idea of organizational legitimacy. A very important theoretical concept in this course. So let's talk a little bit more about stakeholders and their stakes or their claims, their interests. So traditionally, there are really just two objectives of an organization. One is to make money, yes. And another one is a social objective, such as legitimacy. So an organization isn't there just to make money. Today, they are there to try to make, help, well, okay, I'll use the word make. They are there to try to make you as a stakeholder feel that the organization is a good corporate citizen, that it's doing good in society, not just making money, that it has a right to be there, and that it is contributing in good ways to you and you and the community. Two basic objectives of an organization. So today, organizations try to get both. They try the objective of money as well as what we call normative or social objective. Very important today because of social media. Because of social media, you have much more power today as a stakeholder of a nuclear reactor. If it was built in your country and let alone in your community, because of social media, an organization or corporation that owns that nuclear reactor has to pay attention to you and listen to you because you have power, power of communication, to affect other people's perceptions of that nuclear reactor. Your communication in social media has a powerful influence over other people's perceptions, which affects the legitimacy of that corporation. Freeman, the guru of stakeholders, came up with these three types of stakes. And this is going to be important for the next exercise. Stakeholders fall into three categories or types. The first one is equity. In other words, that means ownership. Which stakeholders have ownership in the organization? Usually it's the people who put money into it, so the investors and shareholders. The other type or category of stakeholders is economic or market. In other words, to do with money. So employees who have a financial contract, customers who buy from the company, suppliers who have financial contracts. So that's the second type. The third one is influencer. And I want you to remember this because the influencer category is so much more important today. There are stakeholders who have a lot of influence who don't fit into the other two categories. They don't have a financial stake in the company. They don't have ownership in the company, but they have influence in other ways. Activists, news media, bloggers, trade associations, environmental groups. They fit into this influencer, this third category, and they are very, very, very important today. Okay, so three types of stakes there. Remember those. Now, just because a guru like Freeman says there are three types or categories, hey, that was back in 1984. My challenge to you is, as you study this and as I teach you, if you could think of other categories, I'm challenging you to, theories are there to be expanded. So if you can come up with another category, let me know. And I'll share it, and we can all learn. So now we move on to not just types of stakeholders and who they are, but I'm interested in this question here. Who are the most important stakeholders? And it's a good question to ask, because if you are the CEO of a company and you have listed or identified seven stakeholder groups, the CEO would want to know, well, who's the most important one? And if you are working for the CEO or in some way, you would want to try and answer that question. So Clarkson came up with this idea of two categories, I guess you could say. There's primary ones and secondary ones. So when you identify stakeholders for the CEO, you can try and put them into these different categories. The primary stakeholders. Usually they're stakeholders that the organization can't survive without for financial reasons. For instance, a company can't survive without customers or suppliers, staff. But there's secondary stakeholders as well. So the second category is those who are not financially influential in the organization. And some examples would be environmental groups, trade associations. But the question is, who's most important? We might naturally assume the first category is more important, the primary stakeholders, because of the link to money. But these days, no. It's up to you if you're working in corporate communication and you and the CEO are trying to decide who the most important stakeholders are, you need to think carefully about that. Every company can treat stakeholders differently. So don't just assume the primary stakeholders are the most important. Next week, we're talking about communication strategy. How do you plan and strategize for best communication? But here's, we'll just touch on it now because we're talking about stakeholders. So how do you plan stakeholder communication? Because so far in the last 20 minutes or so, we've just talked about stakeholders, types of stakeholders, who they are. But because this course is about communication, it's called Introduction to Corporate Communication. Communication is important to me, and so I need to talk about how do you communicate with them. So how do organizations plan stakeholder communication? The textbook has three steps, and the first one is what we've already done. We've, for the last 20 minutes, been identifying stakeholders. Second step is then to move on to analyzing them, asking questions about them, who they are. So, for instance, I've put in blue there their information and other needs. So, each one of those stakeholders has a stake in the company, but the question is, what type of stake do they have? What claim, what interest do they have? So, therefore, they are interested in a certain type of information. An investor wants certain information that's different to a customer. The government wants different information than the news media, and so on. So in this second step, you analyze each stakeholder and try and decide what information is it that's important to that stakeholder. For instance, what issues are important to them? We're going to talk about issues next. What issues are important to them? What responsibilities does the organization have to them? Okay, and the third step. The final step is then, once you've done the first two, you can build communication strategies. Because by then you know what information they want. The government wants certain bureaucratic administrative information, and the company needs to supply it to the government. How? How do they communicate that information? So we're going to look at Finnair as an example. Remember the first two steps we've talked about was identify first the stakeholder, and second one is organizations can then provide information needed by the stakeholder. So here's an example, Finnair. Who are Finnair's stakeholders? In other words, what are their stakes? What are their claims? What are their interests? So I want to get you thinking again. So this is the second exercise in this class today. I want you to think about what you've learned and try and think of what are the stakeholders that Finnair might have. What stake or claim or interest do they have in Finnair? That's the first step. So here are some examples. One stakeholder group for Finnair is the trade union. They look after the employees of Finnair. They have a stake in Finnair. What is that stake? Well, they want Finnair employees to have fair employment contracts. That's their claim, their stake in Finnair. They say to Finnair, and they go and have a board meeting with the Finnair management, and they say, okay, this is our stake in Finnair. We have a right to be here. We want to make sure that employees have fair employment contracts. The second type of stakeholder group for Finnair is the news media. News media have a very special interest in airlines. Often, and we're going to talk about issues and crises later, shortly. Airlines and crises go together. For some reason, when we think of a crisis, we tend to come up with examples from airlines. And the news media love crises, and so the news media are interested in airlines. So, the news media are a stakeholder in Finnair. So they say to Finnair, we want you to supply truthful and timely news. They demand that. The news media are powerful. They have a large audience, and they represent their audience, and they go to Finnair and say, you've got some quarterly reports of profits and losses that are about to be published. You need to tell us so we can tell our audience. Many of them are your customers. So that's that's news media's claim in Finnair. They have a stake in Finnair. Now, I want you to have a discussion amongst yourselves with people next to you. Go to the next step. This is it. Question A. What do these following stakeholders need from Finnair? What's their stake in Finnair? Decide that. So, up the back right, up the back there, that corner, think of investors and shareholders. What's their stake in Finnair? The back left, think of customers. What are the customers' stake or claim or interest in Finnair? And I'll ask you for your answers in a minute. So the front right, employees, what's their stake, interest, claim in Finnair? Finally, the front left, environmental groups. Quick. All right. Can you still hear me? Yes. Okay. Time is up. The pressure is on. No pressure. So I said the back right and kind of this group here. So can you guys tell me what was yours? The investors back right. The shareholders, what's their claim? Shout out some. What's their interest, their stake in Finnair? Were you talking about this or? Up the back, yes. Someone say something. Prophet? Yes? Exactly, yeah, good. So, money. Yes, up the back there? Say it again, sorry. Yes, so they're interested in the long term. Yes, making sure that financially Finnair is there for the long term. Yep, that's good. Especially for this, yeah, that group of shareholders, investors. Good. Now I have to go all the way to the other side. But I'll start with the front right. Employees, was that you guys? Employees, so rather than me walk all the way there and back, start with you guys. What's the employee stake?
Money.
Sorry?
Money.
Money, yes. So kind of similar to the investors. What else?
Benefits.
Working environment, very good. Any one more? Any others?
Safety,
very good. For the Finnair people who are working with the aeroplanes especially, so they don't get sucked into the engine or run over. So you guys were what?
Environmental
groups, a very interesting stakeholder group. They have particular claims. Could you think of any? Yep. Controlled emission of the planes, yeah.
Maybe they could use another type of plane that are more
environmentally friendly or something, yeah. I do know that Finnair is very environmentally conscious and they do that. And maybe it's because environmental groups have put pressure on them. Any others?
The more radical ones would probably want them to stop altogether.
For those up the back, she said that some radical environmental groups possibly would want Finnair to stop altogether. Yes.
And all the other,
not just Finnair, of course. Yeah, good. And then we have at the far left, back left, we had customers, right? So as I come up to you, hopefully you came up with some ideas, your thoughts on what customers demand. As the fourth group. Anyone want to say something about that?
Well, safety, obviously.
Yeah. We all tend to fly airlines, and some of us Finnair, and we are interested in safety, yes?
Cheap flights.
Cheap, so money. So, yeah, the price, good. Good, good.
Customer service.
Customer what?
Service.
Customer service. That's important. Yes, yep. Good quality, yes. Good quality blueberry juice. All right, good. So you guys are getting a good idea there of the different stakes. So in other words, the next question for you, keep your groups, because the next question is communication. So, Finnair, let me say this, for the Finnair investors, so the back right, Finnair investors, for instance, shareholders, need what kind of information? So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to think about this. What information do they demand or require from Finnair? And how could that be communicated to them? How could Finnair communicate that information to them? So that's you guys. So we're carrying on this exercise. So then we have the back left for the customers. The same thing. What information do customers demand and how can Finnair communicate that with them? Think about that. And so for the employees, the same, and for the environmental groups, the same. So just a couple of minutes. All right. What sort of information do investors and shareholders want? What sort of information do they want then? So it's kind of similar question to before. All right, you guys, what sort of information?
We want financial statements.
You want financial statements, very good. And then the next question related to that is how should FINEA communicate that with them? Good. So they would, rather than post it in social media to the investors, nice and private, diplomatic ways in board meetings or meetings, shareholder meetings. Anything else? Any other types of information they would want? Yeah. And again, any other ways of communicating that to shareholders? Or the same? Yeah. So website. Good. So you're thinking communication now. So then the front right employees, what information do they want and how should FINEA communicate with them?
Guidelines yep. on how they should work.
Guidelines on how they should work and how should FINEA communicate that to them? There's probably lots of ways. What did you think of? What did you guys think of? How should FINEA communicate with employees?
Directly.
Yeah. Face to face.
And all of them. And clearly enough.
And clearly, yes. How they communicate is important, yeah. So why did you say directly? Why? That's important? It's better than indirect, yeah. Good. Any others? Yes, intranet is really important when it's employees, FINEA, the company, the employer, talking to employees, good. All right, so environmental groups, what sort of information would they want from FINEA and how should FINEA communicate that to them?
What kind and how much do they have emissions?
So, yeah, environmental information like emissions information, statistics, how should FINEA communicate that to them? Yes.
News articles.
News articles, yes.
Statements that they could release.
Yes, good. Statements, news articles.
Statistics
related, communicated in that way. Good. And then finally, up the back left, yours was FINEA customers. So customers have particular information. We talked about that. What information do they want? Yeah.
Flight offers.
Flight offers, so for sales reasons. And what's a really good way for FINEA to communicate that?
Social
network. So social networks, social media. Yep.
Crash statistics.
What statistics?
Crash.
Oh, crash statistics. Well, how would FINEA communicate that? Yeah. Well, do you know what? If you're a stakeholder group and you demand it, FINEA should listen and communicate that to you. Any others? Next week, we're going to talk about communication strategy. So we're going to talk about this in more detail. Because the question is, if you work for FINEA and you're in corporate communication and you have stakeholder information that needs to be passed to them, how do you decide what communication medium to use? Because today, there's so much different tools of communication. You have to decide which one's the most important or effective and so on. So we'll talk more about that next week. In the chapter from today, there was, I think it was related to this topic of stakeholders. They talked about rich media and non-rich media and so on. We don't have time to cover everything, but that might be covered in the exam. There are some things I don't talk about in lectures that are going to be in the exam. But to cover you, In every lecture, I'm going to try and list the things that you need to know for the exam, even the things that we don't talk about in the class. So, and I'm running out of time for this, so some of this I'm going to say to you. It's in the chapter. Study it yourself. Get ready for the exam. And in the weeks leading up to the exam, I'll cover some typical questions to ask. So I'm just going to skip through this because I'm running out of time. We've got to talk about crises and issues that are important to organizations. But here are some things that were in the chapter that you can read in my presentation in Moodle. Things like symmetrical communication, asymmetrical communication. I've got some Finnish words here to help you understand this. And so in the chapter, it talks about different models like these. But I think you can study this yourself. I'll quickly show you this. The old way of thinking is on the left and the new way of thinking on the right. So up the top, we have management of stakeholders. Finnair managing the stakeholders. Whereas on the new way of thinking is Finnair manages with stakeholders and for stakeholders. You see the difference? So from management to collaboration, from exchanging information to engaging with stakeholders over that information, from communicating to stakeholders to communicating for stakeholders and with stakeholders. So it's a much better way of doing things. So we're not going to cover everything. Here's the list of things you need to know based on the topic of stakeholders and stakeholder management. This will be in Moodle, this presentation. So there you go. I think in blue are the things that I didn't cover. So we'll move on. All right. Oh, I started talking about this last week, but I've run out of time. And I'm just teasing you with this because I am going to talk about this next week, because next week we're talking about strategy. And I'll talk to you, use this as a case of the strategy behind this, the communication strategy. So, and we've run out of time for stretching. And I like to do this sort of thing because I'm switching between two topics. But I think you guys are fine. We don't need to do that. Some of you are disappointed, I sense. All right, a crisis. A few years ago, there was an activist group called Blockupy. They still exist, but the images on the screen show what they were, what's the word, activizing? What they were complaining about. The European Central Bank, the ECB, in Europe, with its headquarters in Frankfurt, in Germany, were building a huge skyscraper, their brand new office block, twin towers, millions of euro to pay for this. And yet, Blockupy were complaining because the European Central Bank was demanding that all the members of the European Union follow a certain financial policy called austerity. That financial or economic policy demanded that budgets be managed properly, that they cut back on the expenditure to the people in need in society. Some countries along the southern part of Europe, Greece particularly, were going through some financial problems, and they didn't like this policy from the European Central Bank because it meant that a lot of the poor people, the needy people in their community, couldn't get government funding to survive because the European Central Bank said, no more, don't spend so much, you're overspending. So Blockupy were very angry with the European Central Bank and were trying to fight against this. They were a stakeholder group of the European Central Bank. They were a stakeholder group that the European Central Bank didn't like. So issues and crises. What's the issue and what's the crisis in this? The issue, if I could identify that, was this financial policy called austerity. It was an issue under debate at that time. And it could have become a crisis, and some argued that it was a crisis. So in this story, there were one organization, the bank, and two stakeholders. It was Blockupy and the news media. These images involved the news media reporting on what Blockupy were doing to the European Central Bank. So two stakeholders, one organization. The problem was that this Twin Towers was the bank was telling the European Union members, don't spend too much, but they were overspending on their own headquarters. This glass skyscraper problem. I've got the arrow down the bottom to show that issues can become a crisis. In this case, it was becoming a crisis. 20,000 demonstrators marched through Frankfurt in 2012. There's some examples there. In 2015, there was another protest, and this time there was a lot of violence. Vehicles, cars were put on, were burnt, and buildings were smashed, and the news media took notice more. So, my question is this: why is this important to the European Central Bank? If you were the central bank, and here's the face of the guy who used to head up the central bank who's leaving or left, I think his name is there, Mario Draghi. If he said to you, and you were the communications manager for the European Central Bank, and he was pointing the finger to you like there, and he said, can we manage this issue? Can we manage Blockupy and their protests? Can we prevent this from becoming a crisis or from the crisis getting worse? So, if we can do a quick role play, you represent the European Central Bank communications team. And Mario Draghi, the CEO, says, actually, can I do the role play with you? If you stand up. Let's say I'm the CEO and you're the communications manager. What you can say is up here. So I say to you from this script, I'm Mario Draghi saying to you, we have not managed this issue well at all. There is a potential crisis about to happen, and I'll give you 1 week to manage this crisis. What do you say?
Sure, I'll do it.
Great. Thank you. Now, this role play happens day to day around the world with communications managers and CEOs. It's happened to me. You said it so confidently. So let's get back to some theory now. How do you do this? How do we help her manage this for Mario Draghi? All right. So what's an issue? If you study issues management, which is a theoretical concept that's been discussed for decades, one definition is, firstly, that it's a public concern, as it was for Blockupy and the European Central Bank. It's a public concern about an organization's decisions or its activities and operations, but it also may involve a point of conflict in the stakeholder's opinion. So Blockupy had an opinion about this issue, about the European Central Bank economic policy, and it was making judgments through its protests and through the news media. So there's an example from your textbook of a definition of issues. So some other examples. The toy manufacturer Mattel had to recall a product for safety reasons. The product recall, because there were safety problems, they had to call them back from the customers saying, they're not safe, return them. It was a public concern over the safe toys for children. That was the issue. And Mattel prevented a potential crisis by making a very tough decision to manage the issue by recalling the toys. They managed it, they prevented it. So the corporate communications manager was able to say to the boss, I managed it. For Coca-Cola, an issue might be healthy drinks, or unhealthy drinks, sorry. They make healthy drinks too. For McDonald's, it might be unhealthy food. That has been an issue. For the European Central Bank, it was an economic policy that was harmful to some people in society. So that's an issue. Hopefully you get the idea of an issue, right? Okay, so I'm going to give you a couple of minutes. What are some gender issues? So the back left, gender issues in society. The back right, race or racial issues in society. The front left, religious issues in society. And the front right, employment issues in society. And then keep the second question in mind. What organizations could be linked to these? All right, couple of minutes. Employment issues? That's a good question. Issues that concerns employees typically have around the world. So let's go to the back right, gender issues. So in other words, what are some important things that to do with gender that that affect organizations? So organizations have to talk about these gender issues. Sometimes see it in social media and the news media. Organizations have to deal with certain issues, and sometimes it's gender issues to do with male, female, and so on. Can you guys, I've chose the most difficult one for you guys, so I'm sorry, but hopefully you have something to say. Yes, what are some gender issues? Oh, sorry, what were you? Race, let's start with you. The difficult one is over here, yours is easy. Okay, race. Discrimination, definitely. Racial discrimination, definitely. Good. That's an issue that a lot of companies have to deal with. Good. And then the next question was, can you give some examples of organizations that need to deal with this that you are aware of? Are you aware of any racial discrimination? Would you say that most organizations would have to deal with this, or not so much? Is it a big issue? Let's say in Finland, amongst organizations, a big issue or not so much? Sorry? Not so much in Finland. That's funny you should say that, because, yeah, we do tend to see it through the news media in the USA. They tend to focus on it. Not so much in Finland. Good. All right. So if I'm going down to the front right, we are talking about employment issues. So what are some employment issues? Doesn't have to do with Finland, but around the world.
Replacing old workers with cheap interns.
Yes.
Violating work contracts.
So replacing employees for certain reasons. Yeah, it might be to do with what they pay them and things like that. Good. Lack of potential employees. So lack of skillful employees. Good. And do you know of any Finnish organizations that have had to deal with this?
Well, the gaming industry.
The gaming industry. Ah, okay. And that's a popular growing industry. Good. Okay, so sorry, guys, up the back left, yours was gender. Did you come up with anything, any gender issues? Any gender issues to do with organizations? Huh? Yep.
Equal pay.
Equal pay, good. Very, very important one. Do you think it's an issue in Finland with Finnish organizations? Have you heard? Yeah? Okay. Wow. Good. So now the last one is religious issues, front left. Did you guys and any organizations that you're aware of have to deal with that? Religious issues?
Well, our school, like every school, provide
diet. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So they have to.
Good. So schools in Finland?
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Have to deal with different types of food related to religions. And what was the other one?
Holidays.
Yeah. Good. So these issues affect organizations. Very good. So here's some examples that I had here to show you. You know, child labor is an issue in organizations today. Issue arenas. So Vilma came up with this idea of issue arenas where issues are discussed by stakeholders, particularly online. So when we're talking about these religious gender issues, employment issues and so on, we talk about them publicly, sometimes through social media. And organizations are affected because organizations are linked to these. So it's important for organizations to understand what issues are important to stakeholders. And so often you can go to an issue arena. It might be a Facebook site where people talk about employment issues and they observe what's going on in the discussion in these issue arenas. So because of time, I won't read all this, but this gives you definitions, a bit of an understanding of what are issue arenas. And it's very important today in social media, you can quite easily observe discussions of issues in issue arenas online. Issues management is about finding the issues and engaging with the issues that's important to the organization. So Finnair would need to find the issues important to its employees, to its customers, and so on, and then engage with them. So what's a crisis? Here's a definition of a crisis. It's a critical and intense issue or a hot issue that threatens the very existence of that organization. And issues can lead to crises. If you don't manage the issue, it can lead to a crisis. So it's a critical and intense or hot issue that threatens the profitability, perhaps, the existence even of the organization. So the textbook talks about different phases of an issue that might develop into a crisis. Latent meaning not active, then it becoming active, then the issue intensifying, especially through news media and social media, and then it's a crisis. So, what's important to communications managers for companies like Finnair is what triggers or initiates or starts, what starts an issue and leads it into a crisis. There are some things that move an issue into a crisis, and we need to know about that. Because often it starts with a private opinion, multiplies into public opinion, and there are ways of managing that. Accidents happen, a crash, Finnair crash happens, or European Central Bank puts forward a policy, an economic policy that affects lots of people, that leads to a crisis and so on. So there's more. So it's an event or an issue that requires decisive, immediate action by the company. How are we going for time? A bit more time, good. It gets lots of news media attention, social media attention, and that ends up as a crisis. Sometimes a crisis doesn't happen because the news media don't find out about it. And a good communications manager can silence the issue to prevent it from becoming a crisis. And some of our courses in corporate communication here at the university deals with how do you manage issues to prevent them from being becoming a crisis that affects the reputation of a company. But I'm just introducing you to this idea today. So the textbook talks about how can we try to manage the issue, the crisis, or an issue before it becomes a crisis. First, you scan the environment, you monitor, you measure, you observe what's happening in issue arenas. Secondly, you identify and analyze the issues. If you're a communications manager in the future, in 5 to 10 years, you would need to know how to deal with this. Third, you prepare strategy. So next week we'll talk about strategies. And finally, you evaluate whether you were successful or not. So why is all this important? Because of reputation. Reputation is important. If your reputation falls, employment falls, and that affects everyone. It's important because of money and profits and jobs and so on. So it is important to manage an issue and manage a crisis. The textbook talks about communication strategies. Here are some I'm listing. If you want to know more about them, they're in the textbook. So, I didn't cover everything, but here's a list of things you need to know, and I'll put this in Moodle. Finally, before you go, 5 minutes, can you do this? Go into Moodle. For 5 minutes before you go, I want you to give me some feedback on 2 questions. Firstly, first question you'll find there under Lecture 2 is, what 2 to 3 things did you learn that were interesting to you today? What 2 to 3 things you felt were important today? That's the first question. And the second question is, what did you not understand today that you have a question about? So post a question. Because next week, and it's anonymous, but next week, if you have any questions, you didn't understand anything, I can cover that next week. So please do it now. We've got 5 minutes. It won't take long. This is important to me because I want to know that you are getting this. Because some of you are in first year, some of you second year, some of you are master students. You have different levels of understanding of this, and I want to make sure that you all get it. I value your opinion. Next week, I've got to try and make sure that that poll works on the screen so I can get your ideas up on the big screen. I will try to do that. So just to summarize, question one was, what 2 or 3 things were you interested in today that you liked, that you learned, that were important? And secondly, do you have any questions, or what did you not understand? If you have done that, you can go and you can finish this over the next couple of days. Thank you, and see you next week, Monday.